Sébastien Pérouse. I'm a research professor here at the Center Asia program. So welcome to our monthly seminar on religion, which is part of our Central Eurasian Religion in International Affairs initiative, which is funded by the Henry Luce Foundation. Today I am extremely delighted, extremely happy to welcome Mirak Malnias-Matov. Mirak Mal holds his bachelor's of law degrees from the University of World Economy and Diplomacy in Tashkent, and his master of law and his PhD actually, right? Yeah. From Notre Dame Law School. And Akmal now is a lawyer and co-founder of Tashabbos. So what is Tashabbos? Tashabbos, I don't know if I pronounce that well, Tashabbos. He's a non-profit organization established by young Uzbek lawyers. It was established in 2010. Right. And the mission of this organization is to encourage and to empower citizens to participate actively in the process of strengthening the rule of law in Uzbekistan. So Akmal today will talk about a very important topic in Uzbekistan, I mean a country where internet is, as you know, extremely censored and where regulation on the web has become harsher and harsher. The question is, what are the consequences on freedom and religion, all the more that, again, this freedom is already extremely limited in Uzbekistan. And the exact title of Akmal's presentation this afternoon is Regulations of Bloggers' Activity in Uzbekistan, Implications for Freedom of Religion and Belief. Akmal, the floor is yours. So Akmal will present during, I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes, something like that. And
maybe 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay, but we will have plenty of time for discussion.
That's the aim. Okay. Thanks, Sebastian, for a warm introduction. And thank you, Marlene, and you, and all GW team for keeping the interest on Central Asia going. So the topic today that I would like to discuss, to present, is on blogging in Uzbekistan. Yeah, about the law that was introduced last year in September, which regulates blogging. And the reason, as a lawyer, I was interested, well, laws in Uzbekistan are not that great, right? There is little you can do. You can read, you can be frustrated, and you can find so many mistakes from the, you know, rule of law perspective, from institutional perspective, etc. But my interest was that this time the law was regulating internet. Well, internet was regulated before by media law, as we call it in Uzbekistan. But this particular law addressed blogging, which is becoming more and more famous throughout the world, and especially in Uzbekistan. Why I was interested? Because internet is, as I can see, is in a especially repressed societies, is the last refuge for people, right? Where you can go, find information, express your views that you cannot express otherwise, right? It's basically where you can do everything that is prohibited, right? From watching prohibited things to discussing prohibited topics. So, and one of the areas that falls under extreme restriction in Uzbekistan is freedom of religion. And I can argue that this is sole area that Uzbek government restricts the most. As you can see, U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedoms has been designating Uzbekistan to be a country of particular concern since 2006. Yeah, it's almost 10 years of consecutive designation as country of particular concern. Yeah, majority of prison death, I'm not talking about torture and severe treatment, harsh treatment against religious prisoners. Majority of prison death falls on religious prisoners. And the last one was last year in September again. It was a lady who was a religious scholar and a wife of imam in Tajikistan, who was originally from Uzbekistan, by the way, and he fled Uzbekistan. And obviously, and then you can see there are lots of restrictions on religious expression, on wearing a religious scarf. We are not talking about niqab, which closes all of your face and leaving your eyes only, but just a religious scarf that you use to cover your hair. and leaving your face open. On wearing beard, that there are lots of restrictions on that, education, etc. Just a few months ago, again, Marlene and Sebastian invited me, Kathy Kosman, and Dilorom, the president of Tashabbos, to talk about the religious materials in Uzbekistan, and we made a presentation on that. There is a lot of restrictions on production and importation of religious materials in Uzbekistan. And obviously, because of all these restrictions, there is no scholarship, there is no vibrant discussions of how to balance our secular nature as Uzbeks, as a young, democratic, at least on the documents, country, and obviously the country that carries lots of Islamic Muslim heritage, right? That's why there is no scholarship on that as well. So this is one of the most restricted areas, and obviously there is need among the population to go online, to see, to express their views on how to balance their lives as Muslims and staying moderate and modern, being secular, you know, democracy and all these human rights discourses. And the law basically limits that. Yeah, and here the questions that I was struggling with was internet helping actually people to really feel free? Was it liberating the society? And you can see the quotes from the Egyptian internet activist that says, you know, just give society internet and, you know, it will help it liberate Al Gore, Hillary Clinton. And there are lots of quotes like this saying, if you have internet, you know, the society would slowly liberate itself. In Uzbekistan, there are restrictions, obviously, but there is generally internet connection. Everyone uses internet on the cell phones. They have internet access. I don't have the exact numbers, but there is generally no problem with that. Yeah, and it is pretty affordable as well. So the structure of my presentation would be, I'll provide the overview of the bloggers law that was adopted last year. And then think of why it was adopted, right? Context, you know, obvious, you know, what was the reason that pushed the government to adopt this law? And then obviously its implications on freedom of religion. The law as itself, you know, it has lots of restrictions, would bring lots of restrictions on freedom of expression in general, right? But my focus, as the area that is most subjected to restrictions, is freedom of religion. And that's why I'll be focusing more on that. So the central questions are, you know, was bloggers' law government's response to, you know, growing political activism in Uzbekistan, right? Was the government concerned about that and wanted to limit that? What was actually internet helping people to feel better Muslims, or, you know, to enjoy their freedoms to religion? And when I say Muslims, obviously I have, you know, I have a reminder here that I'm focusing on that. I'm not focusing on Muslims only, as if there are no other religious denominations, right? Other ones are, you know, restricted severely as well. On our website, on Tashabbos, we published a lot on the restrictions that Jehovah Witnesses go through in Uzbekistan. But again, even though that all general religious minorities are persecuted in Uzbekistan, Muslims are the most persecuted ones. So generally the focus would be on them. And is internet down there? I have another question. Actually, is government being skillful in using internet to strengthen its control of information flow? And thus it is allowing internet connection, but at the same time keeping an eye on who is discussing what and who to go after next time. So the law was adopted in 2004, September, and actually it is not a separate law. It has it was an addition to the law on information, on or informatization, I believe. And so it first introduced, give me 1 second. Informatization, yeah. So it added the definition of a blogger to Article 3, yeah? And as you can see, the definition is extremely expansive. It says an individual who posts on his website or web page information that is publicly available and of socio-political, socio-economic, or other nature. Yeah? And the problems deriving from it is its extremely wide scope. It may be interpreted to include anyone, from committed bloggers, right, who blog every day on different topics consistently, and those who can just click on the share function feature of Facebook or post a Twitter post or tweet something, and as well as, you know, post their comment on different blogs, even on Facebook page. And I'm including Facebook and Twitter and the others because the definition is extremely expensive. It includes websites and then website pages, right? And one can argue that Facebook is a website page and can be analyzed separately from a bigger website. So that's the one problem, that it is extremely expensive. I remember after the law came out, there was a law professor who is very famous, pretty famous blogger who blogs, and he was saying, all the people do not worry, it only concerns bloggers, right? So all the other ones who are not bloggers as such should be fine. And he was wrong. And I mentioned that in the article posted on our webpage. The same was done by a parliamentarian who said there is no reason for people to be concerned that every single use or, you know, even just a small comment can lead to potentially would make people fall under this rule. And another new thing about the law was that it added Article 12, which includes all the prohibited actions that bloggers, or generally we can now say anyone who uses internet and social media, can fall under. And it did three things. So Article 12 does three things. It lists prohibited actions, and then establishes a check the accuracy rule, right? And then provides sanctions, obviously. Yeah, so under the prohibited actions, you can see disclosure of state secrets, that's fine. You can see it in almost all laws. Propagation of war, violence, terrorism, actions against constitutional order. They're also problematic and, you know, vague for interpretation. That you can see them everywhere. But the most problematic parts are the last two bullet points, right? Dissemination of information inciting national, racial, ethnic, religious hatred, denigrating honor and dignity, business reputation of citizens, interfering with private lives, as well as any action that entails criminal or other responsibility. And the problems associated with these ones are just a few. Well, denigrating the honor and dignity, there is very little, you know, case jurisprudence related with that in Uzbekistan, but basically, anything that you can post against the government officials or anyone with power can be classified as denigrating honor and dignity of officials, right? There is no concept of public interest in Uzbekistan. So you cannot say, well, what I posted was of public interest, and there is, you know, heightened scrutiny against public officials, and I can post something, even if the information is not correct. Yeah, for example, there was news, and actually that was confirmed by a friend of mine who was at the time a student in the university. So the rector of university had a land, and he was bringing students to work on his land for farming and agricultural purposes, right? And it was on the news. So imagine a person who read that news and shares that on the Facebook, or someone posts it on the Facebook and you share that information, right? You're obviously denigrating a reputation of the official, or at that in that case, you know, university rector, and that can be used against you, even if it's true, or, you know, even if it's difficult to verify it. And then the bigger problem is, it says any act that entails criminal or other responsibility. Now imagine in Uzbekistan, it is officially banned to wear a religious dress. It is not defined what is religious dress, but it is ritual dress, literally. But it is prohibited to wear it, to be in ritual dress in public places. Now, hijab generally was understood by the government officials to be ritual dress, even though there is huge debate that there is no concept of ritual dress in Uzbekistan, right? Now, if there is a lady in Uzbekistan who wears hijab, right, and she has a blog, and she's saying, you know what, yes, there is a government regulation prohibiting hijab in Uzbekistan, right? But I'm against that. Yeah, and here are the ways how we can tackle the problem and hopefully at some point change the law. Yeah, that's how the healthy, you know, civil society works, right? You have blogs, you campaign against the you know, government established rules that you think against your rights and rights. So that person, just because hijab is banned or ritual attire is banned in Uzbekistan, yeah, there is criminal and administrative responsibility for that, right? So you're, by having a block that promotes wearing hijab or changing the rule on prohibiting hijab, right? If you are, if you have that type of block, or you are constantly sharing this type of posts or articles on your Facebook page, right? That also falls under acts entailing criminal or other responsibility. It can be interpreted. Now, the other rule is check the accuracy rule, right? Now, again, the law, the introduction was done, the amendments to the law was done to somehow regulate bloggers' activity in Uzbekistan, right? Now, the check the accuracy rule is generally asked from journalists, right? But even then, there are so many exceptions to that. Now, the law asks from bloggers, whatever you post on your blog, right, it must be accurate. I don't know, you heard about something, you shared on your Facebook page. How are you going to verify it, right? There is a, I don't know, ban on driving cars in Saudi Arabia. How are you going to prove that? Or you know, anything else, well, the government can literally come after you and ask for the verification accuracy for every single post you posted. And there's just no way, it goes actually against the essence of having a social media. You share information. And the accuracy or not, it comes after debating, after sharing the information with other people. So, and then the last one is obviously it provides a sanction. Sanction is again, it is very vague. It states in case of failure to abide by the rules, by the aforementioned rules, the access to the specified website or web page can be restricted by an authorized authority in the procedure established by the Cabinet of Ministers. Now, Cabinet of Ministers is an executive power, right? But the regulation doesn't state who is an authorized body. Is it a KGB? Is it a, you know, the SMB, as we call it, the National Security Service of Uzbekistan? Is it a different wing of Cabinet of Ministers? There is no clarification with regard to that. What is the procedure established, right? What is the established procedure, right? How do you verify, you know, how the authorized body decides to block the access to your website or web page? So these are the problems. Main problems with the law. Now, so far, how many months? 5 months, right, already passed. I haven't seen any. I was trying to find some information on of if anyone was detained for that, was summoned to the, you know, to the Interior Ministry for interrogation or questioning or interview about the substance of the, or about the content of the posts on websites or web pages. But, and there are several reasons why there was, I think that I haven't seen that happening, and I'll stop on that later on. But before that, as a lawyer, well, the part that I did above, you know, just looking at the law and analyzing the problems with it is relatively easy, right? You can see in such a badly written law, it is easy to find problems that you can face as a blogger or a social activist that uses internet heavily. But I was thinking of why it was adopted at last year in September, right? Was it in response to growing, to developing blogosphere in Uzbekistan? Was political posting or blogging in Uzbekistan developing, etc.? So that's why the first question I posed is, was there any critical blogging in Uzbekistan, right? And I don't think so. There is no independent journalism in Uzbekistan, right? All the independent media is based abroad. To my knowledge, and I try to follow closely, that there is no independent blogging in Uzbekistan. You wouldn't see any analytical, any critical posts about the social developments in Uzbekistan on anything. It And I'm not talking about solely about, you know, being against the government or political, right? Anything from women issues to human rights, anything, right? And you just don't see that in Uzbekistan. And there was no increased information attack from abroad, right, about the situation in Uzbekistan. And I can actually argue that interest in Uzbekistan is going down day by day. There is, less amount of information written, or, you know, there is less research on Uzbekistan and Central Asia in general. So there was no increased information coming from abroad, either from foreign media or from emigre community of Uzbeks. But nevertheless, in Uzbekistan itself, the blogging and, you know, cyber activism was growing. Just a quick search on Facebook gave me the following results, right? So you can see the most famous, as I could see, was the public oversight page on Facebook, right? And people were posting different things. So they would see a trash on the street, they would, you know, take a picture and post it on Facebook and say, look, our authorities, local administration is not taking care of the trash on the streets. So this type of posts there, if there is a line to get to buy something or to replace your passport, they would take a picture and then post it, which is good. But, you know, that is the highest level of critique or, you know, discontent that is being expressed. And as you can see, it has over 22,000 followers. And then there are lots of on consumer rights. You will see a picture of a bread or a brand of milk, and people say it went bad in 2 days instead of a week, you know, and this type of post. And then obviously the shopping Facebook pages are famous on beauty, fitness, and the others. There is growing blogging activity from Uzbek community. When I say Uzbek speaking community, right? Generally, the good websites that carry good content are in Russian, right? But recently, you could see that in the last 2-3 years, I think the good blogs and websites are appearing that are only in Uzbek, and that has grown in Uzbekistan. So there is this website that is for bloggers, and it organizes different competitions, you know, for who is an active blogger, who has good posts on their blogs and the others. And there are 127 blogs only in Uzbek registered on that website. But again, if you go into their content, there is nothing political. There is, you know, no contentious issues that are being discussed, right? Generally, it is literature, maybe sports, just the thoughts on daily issues and topics like this. There are some Islamic, the topic is, you know, religious freedom. I saw some good blogs in Uzbek again on Islamic blogs. And the first one is pretty good and active. He posts regularly. And then there are websites. Now the Islam Uz, the www Islam Uz, is a very famous website, right? And it basically has a network or empire of the wings, right? And they're all under the same, that's the same team. The guys are very committed, very good. And you can see that the government is giving some free way for them to operate, right, with regard to freedom of religion. And you can see their websites covering everything from Muslim perspective. You can even see history from Islamic perspective, right? They have posts on historic developments. But it has this good, you know, religious analysis on how Islam contributed this and that. There is the last one. There is a website on even mosques in Uzbekistan, as if we have the best mosques in the world, you know. But we still have a separate website for that. So there is activity definitely going on. But again, you wouldn't see in none of those anything that is contentious. Yeah, anything that brings out the real issues, why people cannot wear a beard on the streets. Why people cannot walk with hijab on the streets? Why you cannot pray in your workplace? Yeah, if you want. And obviously, Facebook pages, very famous ones, are the sheikhs. Sorry. Yeah, again, Islam Moz page on Facebook has almost 8,000 followers. And then Sheikh Muhammad Sadiq Muhammad Yusuf is a very famous scholar. Yeah, he's a scholar of international recognition. Right, the letter that was sent to ISIS saying that you guys are wrong, that you know Islam is not about this. He was one of the signatories of that letter. The only signatory from, I believe, Central Asia, if not from even Russia as well. So he's very famous and he has lots of followers. And the websites I mentioned above are, you know, generally his students, you know, who are running them. So he's pretty active too. And you can see Islam versus atheism. There is such a web page and it has only 32 followers. So you can see when you compare it to religious web pages and, you know, something atheistic or secular, you can see the number of followers. That also shows what is the interest among the population to religious issues. Now, this is slightly disorganized, I'm sorry, but the question I posed, the context, right? Why was the blogging, especially on religious matters, developing? So I say no, but generally the blogosphere developed in Uzbekistan. People were, you know, posting more and more things on religious issues, but no critical posting, right? So the next question I ask comes to Russian law on bloggers, yeah. And amazingly, it was adopted on August 2014, whereas the Uzbek law came out in September 2014. Yeah, so there is this, you know, some type of, you know, continuation of attacking bloggers with different legal regulations. Yeah, so that came out. I promised to talk about 15 to 20 minutes, and it was, sorry, but... And I don't think Russian law affected in any way Uzbek decision to adopt their own law. Right. Maybe it had some influence, but the reason why it was adopted would come later, and I don't think this one. And there are several reasons for that. I think Russian law on blogs came out as a response to political, to active political opposition at that time, right? To the conflict in Ukraine, anti-government protests, right? The law is pretty well written, actually, right? It gives a good scope, it delimits who is a blogger, right? And it says, if you have more than 3,000 readers, right, you will be qualified as an active blogger. And then you have to meet those requirements. What is it? All mass media regulations apply, right, of, you know, being objective or, you know, checking the accuracy of what you post and the others. The website or blog must be registered, and then the person who is the owner of the website or blog must register. So you cannot be an anonymous blogger, right? The government needs to know who is posting. Okay, now and then there is a third reason, right, why I think the law came out. And I think that's Islamic State, ISIS, basically. ISIS started using internet and social media in 2014, and we've seen that the increased use of it, starting from sometime in summer and June, arguably, right before the preparation to Samarra and Mosul, which were very, very strategic points to win. For ISIS, yeah. So they were, you know, posting different posts on to recruit, to show their power, their beheading, and all the other atrocities. And I think that was actually the main reason for the government to think of the social media, of internet's influence on the population, on Uzbek population in Uzbekistan. If you go to YouTube, you'll see like literally hundreds of posts from those territories by Uzbeks in Uzbek, making jokes. And, you know, numbers say that there are about from 2,000 to 5,000, some reports say 10,000 coming from Central Asia. Amazingly, you will see different people on those YouTubes. You can see that from the way they talk, they behave. Some of them are extremely educated. There is a post that has been placed on YouTube by a person who I think even have journalistic background. He made extremely, you know, good quality shots of their life in those camps, of the way how they attack and how they prepare, how they have good life, celebrate holidays and the others. And the guy is extremely educated, and I think he has some journalist background as well. So, you know, it is drawing to itself different layers of population from Central Asia and Uzbekistan. And I think the law came out as a response to that. So the government didn't know what to do, and it was saying, you know, thought maybe we should adopt something that would limit that to some extent. Well, implications. Obviously, it has very severe implication on the rule of law and general sense of respect to constitution. Right, constitution is states that everyone has a right to freedom of expression and freedom of belief. Right, and it can be only restricted in very particular instances. But as I have indicated above, the way how the law is drafted is extremely expensive and basically brings the constitutional right to freedom of expression and freedom of religion and belief to nothing.